We have a special guest who I'm so grateful could be with us today, particularly on a day like today when I am struggling to speak. But I believe it's going to take us to a place of deep listening, especially for me. People like myself have to be fed in order to feed. And so I look forward to sitting at the feet of one of the masters and drinking deeply from the wisdom that will flow through you today. I want to take a moment to share some words about our guest today. He is a composer, an educator, and an author of the best-selling book, The World Peace Diet, devoting to providing uplifting and healing original music and helping people to heal and awaken their inner wisdom and their genius. Anybody need that? Okay. He's presented lectures, concerts, and workshops throughout North America and Europe. He has a PhD in education from the University of California at Berkeley, focusing on education intuition. He's taught college courses in philosophy, the humanities, mythology, creativity, and comparative religion. He is a Zen priest and Dharma master in the Korean Zen tradition. And he currently conducting a music, art, and education ministry with his wife, Madeline. Is she here today? She's not with us. A visionary artist from Switzerland. He travels and provides lectures, concerts, workshops, inspiring art, prints, cards, books, and CDs in all wonderful forms. What I've been most impressed about as I've been learning about you is your commitment to playing big in the world, for the environment, for the life forms on this planet, your commitment to waking us up to being conscious about that. We're talking about playing big all month long, and we've got a big player in the house. Let's welcome Dr. Will Tuttle to Unity of Sacramento.
Bless you. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. And in the relatively short and precious time that we have together here, I'd like to share a few thoughts with you and feelings. The fundamental teaching, I think, that all of the world religions point to is the teaching of quieting our mind and connecting with the inner wisdom that is always present. My wife Madeline and I have been traveling now for 17 years full-time in a rolling home in an RV all over North America and speaking and putting on workshops at Unity churches, primarily Unity churches. And so we've had the opportunity to experience hundreds of churches in every state except North Dakota. There isn't one yet, but we'll find one. When there is one, we'll be there. And I think it's very important to remember, as we are gathered here this morning, that there are people gathering in Unity churches all around. And I think Unity is one of the healthiest movements on this planet, especially in our society today, because it's essentially a message of radical inclusion, of learning to include all beings, including ourselves, within the sphere of our kindness and compassion. I remember when I was a kid growing up in New England, I was taught that people that went to our church, if we would just believe our special creed, we would go to a special heaven just for us. You know, and there's that sense of exclusiveness. But Unity really, I think, is in many ways a direct interpretation and transmission of the original teachings of Jesus. And I think of all the great spiritual teachers to, as Charles Fillmore said, they have a direct connection to headquarters, as he put it. You know, connect directly to headquarters within ourselves, within our own consciousness. And so I think there's two fundamental teachings underlying everything. Number one is the teaching of connecting authentically with the transpersonal dimension. Connecting authentically with that dimension of ourselves that goes beyond the personality that we identify with. We essentially in our society are encouraged and in many ways forced. We're injected with a program by the moment we're born, really, and as we grow up, to see ourselves merely as an object, as a thing that was born and will die, as a fundamentally separate self. And therefore, we have to try to get what we want and keep away what we don't want. And we're locked in a struggle, and others are doing the same thing. And that is essentially, in the Buddhist tradition, that's called samsara. That means essentially, it means struggle that never ends. And it's based on ignorance, not understanding the truth that we are, that what we are essentially is consciousness, is eternal awareness, that was never born and will never die. And when we look not only at ourselves, but when we look at others that way, when we don't see the outer form, whether they're young or old, tall or fat, whatever, all these outer things, when we see the life, the being that makes this outer manifestation possible, that is healing. We are bringing forth the truth, seeing the truth, the light, the love and the power that gives rise to every manifestation. There's an old teaching that represents this by the simile or the metaphor of a footprint. And the idea is that if we're walking on a beach somewhere on the sand and we see a footprint there, see some footprints, we don't go up to one of the footprints and say, "Well, hello, Roger, how are you today?" You know, we see that that's just a footprint of a being who you can't actually see by looking at the footprint. What you're seeing right now is a footprint. You don't see the being that makes this possible. And when we understand this, we begin, I think, to take time. And I think there's no greater gift we can give to ourselves, to our loved ones, and to the world than the gift of connecting with our intuition, this inner knowing that we have within us, quieting our minds, the endless words of the cultural program. You know, we're bombarded with messages from Walmart ads and all these things telling us to buy this and do that, or we're not going to be authentic and real and happy and successful. But actually, when we quiet our mind and connect with this inner knowing, we begin to live our life. And living our life is the greatest gift we can give, and it comes from connecting with our intuition. So that's number one, connecting with the transpersonal dimension. Number two, the other universal teaching is kindness. Realizing that all of us are born into a culture and into a situation that's difficult. And realizing that any time I act or even think that I can somehow benefit myself at the expense of someone else, I'm harming not only them, but I'm harming myself even worse. We never get away with anything, ultimately, in the big picture. And the greatest gift is to bless others. The greatest joy we can ever have, essentially, is the joy of discovering the unique gift that we are here to bring to the world. That each one of us has a gift to bring, and that as we do that, we connect with the joy that is our true nature. And so underlying all of this is the teaching that the very core essence that we are, if we dig down deep enough, quiet our minds, let go of the worries and concerns and the regrets and so forth, we will always find a bubbling spring of joy. That is the truth that we are. We work very hard to keep it well covered over and to try to get something and criticize ourselves and others and so forth and keep that under. But together as a community and also as individuals within the community, as we make an effort to realize the truth that we are, what we're going to be realizing is the sense of joy that is fundamental and is, in a sense, always present. And I'll just begin to move towards the completion of my talk by talking a little bit about my own story here, because I think it's somewhat indicative of this in the sense that, you know, I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts. I was born there back in the 50s, and I remember it was kind of a neat place to grow up because it was, well, there was two revolutions there. One was the this is actually April 19th is Patriots Day. It's coming up. I always think of it. It's the commemoration of the beginning of the American Revolution. My father would get on his Minuteman outfit, get the gun off the wall, you know, and we'd all go down to the Old North Bridge in Concord, and we would shoot against these other guys that were dressed up like redcoats, and we'd send them back to Boston, and we'd celebrate the revolution. And the idea was, if you have a situation that's intolerable, you should have a revolution, you know, change it. Why not? And so, so I always loved that sense that we can make a positive change. We can change things. And that's one thing. And then, but interestingly enough, about 100 years later, in the 1800s, there was another different kind of revolution, really, that was in many ways also in Concord. It was called the Transcendentalist Revolution. So I was, in a sense, lucky enough to be able to be born in Emerson Hospital and go to Thoreau School and learn to swim in Walden Pond and go to Alcott School. You know, and these were the people back then, actually, the very first ones to bring the teachings from Asia into North America, the Bhagavad Gita and teachings from Taoism and Buddhism and Hinduism and all this, and bringing ideas that in many ways were somewhat revolutionary, the idea that God is not only male, you know, it's actually also equally female. Wow, what a thought. And the idea that God is principle from the Taoist tradition, or God is mind from the Buddhist tradition. And these ideas that somehow help us to break out of a very tight Western kind of illusion, in a sense. Anyway, so I was, you know, born and raised there, and I remember going away to college in Maine, and I was in my middle of my time there, and I started... Well, I remember Joseph Campbell talked about having a midlife crisis. He says it's when you're climbing up this ladder, and you're climbing and climbing and climbing, you get up a certain point, and you're just feeling really good. I'm getting pretty high up on this ladder, and then you realize your ladder's against the wrong wall. I don't even want to go up this wall. What the heck am I doing, you know? I don't care less to get up this wall. And so it hit me early. I was like 21. I was going through a midlife crisis. And so... It was agonizing. But I started reading all these books on Zen and other things and the Bible, Jesus, what he was saying, you know, and I realized, and then one book that kind of brought it all together was a book written back in the 1890s by a guy named Richard Buck. He wrote a book called Cosmic Consciousness. And I remember reading that and I was like, wow, this was so interesting, because he gave examples. And he said basically that human beings are at the stage of what he called self-consciousness, where all of us, basically, we're concerned about ourself. And that is, like I said earlier, samsara, suffering that never ends. But he said certain great beings, you know, the founders of religions, great poets, mystics, saints, sages, both men and women, had attained what he referred to as cosmic consciousness. They had somehow transcended or grown beyond or evolved. They made an effort, and they had awakened to a higher state of consciousness where they lost this selfish clinging, this sense of being afraid of everything, of trying to dominate and control. And they had an intellectual and ethical and spiritual presence and maturity. And what he said that was so interesting to me, he said that all of humanity, we are all on an evolutionary journey. These are the first pioneers, but we're all going there. And that's our purpose. That is our essential purpose. We're not here just to accumulate things and impress people. We're here to actually get to a higher level of awareness, cosmic consciousness. So I remember going back, telling my father, hey, Dad, you know, I learned about cosmic consciousness. And he was like, look, we're spending a lot of money on this education. And I mean, what's that going to get you anyway? I was supposed to take over the family business. He owned, by that time, he put together a whole chain of newspapers, and I was the oldest child. I was going to take it over. But I felt like it would be a distraction. I remember telling him, you know, there's so much more to life. And I talked to my younger brother, Ed, 2 years younger than me, about these ideas, and to my delight, he went, yes, that's it. Let's do it. So we put our heads together, and it's kind of like one thing to say, well, we want to train cosmic consciousness. The other thing is, well, what do you do? How do you actually do it? And so we thought about it for a while, and then we came up with a solution. We figured it out. We knew what to do. And we told our parents. We said, we're going to attain cosmic consciousness. They said, what are you going to do? We said, we're going to go to California. That's it. We get there, we'll have it. This is like 1975. San Francisco, here we come. Cosmic consciousness. So I remember that. It was so interesting. So there we were. I remember walking down the driveway of my parents' home, you know, I had a little backpack on, some fresh baked cookies from my mother. We were heading west. You know, we walked out. We basically walked. We hitchhiked a little bit. We walked. We worked our way west. And after about a month and a half, maybe or so, it was like mid-October, getting cold. We had gotten as far as Buffalo, and there we were in Buffalo. It was freezing. And I remember thinking, well, and we had no money. We didn't have. We gave away everything we had because if you're carrying it, pretty soon you don't need it, you know. And we were just on this path of inner inquiry. We'd found a book by a guy named Ramana Maharshi, a great sage from India, and he recommended just find out who you are. Ask this question: who am I? Go deeper and deeper with self-inquiry. Get beyond the idea that what I am is my body, what I am is my sense impressions, what I am is my feelings and emotions, what I am is my thoughts, what I am is my mind. Find out what is the source of what you are. Go deeper with this. So we just decided to head south and keep ahead of the cold front, you know. So we started just going south, and we walked about 15 or 20 miles every day, meditating, going, who am I, working on that. And we walked down all the way down through upstate New York, down across Pennsylvania, into West Virginia, down across. And when we got into West Virginia, they said, boys, you're in the Bible Belt. I was like, uh-oh, okay, so what's that mean? I found out what that meant. That means they try to save you every night, really. I mean, it was really interesting. Because we didn't have any money, we were just basically staying on the floors of churches most of the time, and so it's a long story, but anyway, it was great. We had miracles really happening. Sometimes we never went hungry. I remember one time we were wondering where the next meal was going to come from, and there by the side of the road was a sandwich just wrapped up and just waiting for us, and we weren't even surprised. It was like, here it is, you know. And they would ask us to come and speak to their Sunday school, and we would just tell the kids, it's true. Seek what Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else will be added unto you. You'll be taken care of. I remember they gave us $30 as a for speaking to the Sunday school. And we went to this local on the way out of town to a little restaurant, and dinner back then for two people was maybe $12. And so I remember giving the waitress, we gave her an $18 tip, and we said, we're not going to hang on to anything. We just go and let each day take care of itself. And it was just like that, and we walked, and eventually we ended up in Tennessee, and we ended up eventually at a place called The Farm. And The Farm in 1975 was the largest hippie commune in the world, almost 1,000 people, and they were pretty much all from California. So I thought, wow, here we are. And so we ended up basically staying there for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then we continued south, and we ended up eventually at a Zen center in Alabama. And now you think I'm lying, but there really was a Zen center down there. And then eventually I did get out to San Francisco, and eventually got my PhD at Berkeley, and eventually went to Korea for a while and shaved my head and lived as a Zen monk there. And all, you know, different things, and eventually met Madeline in Switzerland, and we've been traveling now actually for 20 years going to Unity churches. And the unfoldment of this lifetime, it's really an adventure for all of us. I think we all have an adventure. And the most important thing that I want to just kind of close my talk here with is this experience that I remember having on this walk quite, you know, a number of times. I remember we were walking, and we had no reason in the outer world to be happy. We didn't have any money. We had no security. We didn't know where the next meal was going to come from, where we're going to spend the night, what was going to be around the next corner. And we were just walking with nothing. And I remember for the first time in my life, it seemed like, maybe since I was 1 year old or something, I felt these waves of joy just washing over me. And I think that's what I meant when I said this core of joy that we all have. I think it was just natural when we are living our life, when we're following our inner wisdom, our intuition, and just living our life. It doesn't mean our life will be easy, but it does mean we will have a sense of joy. We'll have a sense of purpose and meaning. And I think when each one of us does that, we don't have to try to change other people. Just being ourselves, we create around us a field of energy that people will feel. And you will naturally liberate them, naturally encourage them to do the same thing, to live their life. And as each one of us does that, and as we come together as a community, each one of us doing the inner work to live our life and to connect with our intuition, we create a powerful community that spreads a message out into our entire into our entire world. I think there's no greater thing we can do than to come to this planet and connect with our intuition and live our life. And it's difficult in many ways to do, so it's great to have a community to support us in doing that. So I want to thank all of you. I know if you found your way through the door here and are here this morning, then you've already started questioning the program, you've already started connecting with your inner wisdom, and you're already someone who is a healer of the situation here. And I love you and really appreciate and respect you for the efforts that you've made, and it's so important. I'd like to just close now with a very short piece of original music, and just invite you as you're listening to listen with your intuition, to let the music perhaps just take you on an inner journey briefly. This will be a piece called Benediction of Light, and just to basically send our blessing out into our community, to our loved ones, to the world, to the non-human animals, also celebrating their lives here, to the whole web of life, knowing that as we love, we are loved. This is Benediction of Light. Enjoy. Thank you all. Thank you very much. Much love to you. Bless you all. Thank you. Thank you.